Hi everyone. Just before we get started, I wanted to let you know that the next couple of episodes will have slightly more sensitive themes. And in this episode, I'll be talking about a real-life kidnapping of a young girl that took place in the 1930s. Welcome to Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. When the circus comes to a small Irish town, the air changes. The colourful peaks of the Big Top rise, and the bright lights and flags tell everyone that a wholly different world has arrived. Children and adults alike cram into seats around the ring, eyes wide at the spectacle. And then, in a few days, it's gone. The tent and performers, and the magic they create, seem to melt away, and life goes back to the dullness of before. Is there anyone out there who hasn't dreamed at least once of running away to join the circus? It's not difficult to see how the thought of abandoning your mundane, oppressive existence for a new life of change and excitement has captured so many imaginations throughout time. But what happens when that circus lifestyle is in fact the existence you are trying to escape? When the world people dream of joining is the very life you are longing to leave? In 1937, the attempted elopement of a young German acrobat and an Irish circus hand from Galway led to a midnight car chase to the Irish border and a court case that captivated the country. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. Fawcett's Family Circus has been running in Ireland for over 100 years. The circus was founded on a real-life versions of these classic tales of escapism. In 1870, George Lowe eloped from his family in Mallow and joined a travelling circus with his fiancée. Styling himself as the amazing Dr. Powell, George went on to perform with Buffalo Bill Cody in the USA, and by the turn of the century was touring Ireland with his own group. A young bareback horse rider, Edward Fawcett, fell in love with George's daughter Mona. They were married in 1922, and Fawcett took over the running of the circus when George retired some years later. Edward Fawcett was the son of Sir Robert Fawcett, already of long-standing English circus fame. Thus, he was already well experienced in the art of putting on a serious show. The circus efforts of this Fawcett name, spreading throughout the world and lasting now for over 150 years, makes it the oldest family circus in the world. For people in the small towns and countryside of Ireland, the visit of a circus troupe brought with it a welcome opportunity to escape your daily life. It was the 1930s, and these decades following the War of Independence and the Irish Civil War were certainly in need of some cheer and spectacle. Ireland was finding its feet again as a newly independent state, and through entertainments like the travelling circus, people were able to put their tragic past behind them and come together as a community again. Plus, the tickets were cheap, about 4 pence for a child. Prior to the coming of the television in the 1960s, there were around 140 travelling shows of various kinds making their way throughout Ireland. Circuses, magic shows and travelling theatres. However, even as early as the 1930s, the newly created border between Northern Ireland and the Republic was already proving a difficulty. As one joke from the time goes, there was once a circus travelling to Donegal with 2 elephants, but when they arrived, there were no elephants to be seen. The waiting men asked what had happened. Oh, the circus men answered. The elephants were delayed at the border because their trunks had to be searched. In spite of such hindrances, circuses ran all over Ireland, all throughout the year, even during the solemn fast of Lent, when all other entertainment ceased for 6 weeks. Starved of amusement, the excitement when the circus was in town was intense. The first sign of the circus's arrival came with the advance agent arriving in his horse and brightly coloured caravan to put colourful posters up, boasting proudly of the many daring acts the townsfolk would soon have the chance to see. Often these had wild exaggeration. As one circusman said, "If we have 50 elephants, say 100. On circus day, we are boys and girls again, and we want to believe that there are 100 million trillion elephants in the parade, and 1 billion funny clowns, and whole bushels and bushels of beautiful ladies on white horses." The people in towns loved these spectacles and tall tales, and often let their imaginations run away from them completely. Lots of folklore from this time describes people leaving the circus in the evening, only to hear the calling of spirits, fairies, and other supernatural beings as they went on their way home. For many, the circus felt like a bridge between two worlds, the ordinary, everyday life, and the magical other world that was always just around the corner. With your mind opened and your imagination piqued from a night at the circus, you never knew what you might see. Circus owners encouraged these romantic notions, as they were good for business. In keeping with the tendency to exaggerate, Fawcett Circus was known in the 1930s by the rather more colourful title of the Great Heckenberg Berlin Tower Super Circus. The group had nothing to do with anyone called Heckenberg, but Edward Fawcett liked to use exotic names as a way to increase the sense of mystery and drive business to the shows. Having a diverse, international cast also helped, and Fawcett enlisted many performers from Europe and further afield to join the troupe, particularly for the busiest summer season. Sometimes, Jewish and Roma performers came to Ireland to escape the growing persecution they were facing in their own lands at the time. In March 1937, a family of acrobats from Hamburg, Germany, joined the Heckenberg Circus for the summer season. They were Bernhard and Laura, and their daughter Laura, who was 13. Acrobatics was one of the most exciting features of the Heckenberg Circus. It was still a relatively new art form at this point. Up until the mid-19th century, circuses were mainly famous for their daring animal acts, with equestrians and horse trainers featuring as the stars of the show. But Edward Fawcett himself was an accomplished acrobat, and his circus featured trapeze and perch acts, with the graceful lifts and balances described by one reviewer at the time as a poem in motion. Acrobatics is exactly the kind of performance that elevates the dream view of circus life. That feeling of intense freedom and the ability to captivate, defying even the laws of gravity as you launch yourself into the air. Of course, the reality is rather different. Performers must dedicate years of grueling practice to capture that appearance of effortless fluidity. The memoir of one 20th century acrobat describes the intensity needed to excel. He began daily training for trapeze acts when he was aged just 3, and had been rehearsing daily ever since. To build up and maintain the necessary muscles, near constant practice is required. Acrobatics is hard. It's dangerous too. The heights and contortions expected from a serious circus show can badly hurt or even kill performers when not done correctly. It's a constant juggle to maintain safe practice while continuing to bring new and increasingly shocking performances to entertain your audience. 13-year-old Laura was already beginning her circus career, performing an acrobatic and dancing act with her parents in Heckenberg Circus. She was blonde and beautiful, so the newspaper accounts describe, and her parents had high hopes for her as a performer. Laura was receiving regular training in acrobatics from her father, but she didn't enjoy this. Though acrobatics were her family's trade, Laura hoped one day to go away from her parents' life and try something entirely on her own. She was a child, rebelling against the strict path her parents had set for her. But instead of dreaming of running away to the circus, Laura's life meant that a different dream of escape was required. Laura's hopes for a different life were increased when she and her family joined the circus in the west of Ireland. There, she was befriended by Harry Hensley, an older employee of the Heckenberg Circus. There's a little bit of a question mark over Hensley's age. Newspaper articles have him as 30, 32, or even 40, but the closest birth record would put him as 25 at the time of the incident. In any case, he was undoubtedly too old to be making plans of any kind with 13-year-old Laura. The family performed and travelled with the Heckenberg Circus that entire summer. Harry Hensley would visit their caravan often in this time, getting closer and closer to young Laura. Laura's parents had noticed Hensley's interest, and they were worried about it. Hensley repeatedly assured Laura's father, Bernard, that there was nothing between him and Laura other than friendship, but just my opinion, that is honestly the least reassuring way to behave under the circumstances. In October, the Heckenberg Circus reached Ballina in County Mayo. The touring routes of circuses were planned out as far as 2 years in advance, pre-booking sites and venues, getting new costumes, props and lights, and rehearsing their productions until it was totally perfect. At Ballina, the Heckenberg Circus would have arrived as they did at any small town, with the advance men cycling ahead first to put up posters, then travelling back to the troop to join the others as they entered the town. On arrival, the workers began the build-up, setting up camp and erecting the colourful tent or big top in a clearing in the town. Following this came the grand parade, when the circus performers, workers, and animals marched through the town to let everyone know they had arrived in style. They would be cheered on by excited crowds, and often schools would let their children out early so that the crowds could gather and watch the circus people arrive. By this time, Laura and Hensley's talk had progressed. They were discussing running away together. They talked about setting up their own show or business, one where Laura could give up acrobatics and lead a new life. As they grew closer, Laura's parents grew more and more concerned. On October the 19th, Laura's mother looked through the window of her caravan and saw Laura and Hensley standing together. They weren't embracing, she later told the court. They were just standing near each other and talking. But she said they were too friendly. Laura slapped her daughter. Relations were clearly strained in the family. It's hard to tell now how much of this was brought on by Hensley's manipulation and how much of it was in Laura's mind already. In any case, Laura was deeply troubled at this stage. She felt she would be doing her parents good by leaving them. The following morning, October 20th, Bernard sent his daughter into Ballina town for groceries. There was a matinee performance scheduled later that day. Edward Fawcett's son, Johnny, came up to Bernard and told him that he'd seen Hensley leaving. A while later, when the show was about to start and Laura had yet to return from the shops, Bernard became apprehensive, sending his wife to look for her. The family had a trunk where they kept their clothes and costumes for each performance, so Bernard opened it to get ready for the show. Laura's clothes were missing. Realizing what had happened, Bernard rushed to the local Garda station. As he spoke very little English, he needed an interpreter to explain what had happened. Luckily, just such a person was available within the Heckenberg Circus's diverse cast. An Asian performer called Boris Lidhotsain was travelling with the circus at the time. Boris was fluent in 14 languages. He even spoke a small amount of Irish. Boris was able to put across the urgent message easily, to the wild excitement of the local media. The guards quickly investigated and learned that Laura and Hensley walked, or possibly hitchhiked, to Enniscrone across the Mayo-Sligo border, taking a bus from there to Sligo town. They were tipped off later in the evening that the pair had reached Black Lion in County Cavan, mere minutes on foot from the Northern Irish border and the Fermanagh town of Belcoo. If Hensley managed to get Laura across the border, it would be much more difficult for the guards to stop him. They could be lost to the family, possibly forever. A late-night car dash ensued. The guards rushed to Black Lion to stop the pair before it was too late. They reached them just in time, and were able to accost Hensley and bring the couple back to Ballina. Newspapers all report their parting as a painful scene. Laura had believed, however misguidedly, that Hensley was leading her to a better life. Now she was facing the shatters of this dream. Hensley most likely knew the penalty he was about to face. When he was taken into custody, he simply said, "There is nothing I want to say." The trial took place a couple of days later, with Boris Lidhotsain featuring as key interpreter, translating for the various Heckenberg witnesses. It was a scene which, as you can imagine, caused quite a stir in the Ballina District Court of 1937, generating sensationalised articles in local and national newspapers. The headlines were lurid. Circus romance shattered at the border. Germans and Chinese, tales of the circus. One can imagine the splash it made in the midst of commonplace local news titles. The surrounding articles in the Ballina Herald were things like "Drunk in charge of motor lorry" and "Nurse appointed." Ironically, poor Laura Newmare's hopes for escape and a different life, twisted and manipulated by Hensley, and dashed altogether when she was returned by the Gardaí to her parents, had become fodder for the newspaper escapism of thousands across Ireland. The Newmares left Heckenberg Circus and returned as a family to Germany in 1938. Shortly after this, with the outbreak of World War II, it became much more challenging for circus owners to secure international performers, and the compulsory tillage regulations instigated in the emergency meant that the Fawcett family members had to spend more time working on their farmland in Wicklow. They also had to change their title. When news of World War II reached where they were performing in Derry, the Heckenberg Berlin Tower Super Circus was pelted with stones and run out of town. It was rebranded overnight into Edward Fawcett's Circus Cavalcade, which performs simply as Fawcett Circus today. Despite these wartime hiccups, they remained successful. Circuses actually had a better time in this period than newer forms of entertainment like plays and films, which were rigorously censored to keep with Ireland's wartime neutrality. Mona and Edward Fawcett died young, in 1946 and 1951, leaving their three sons, Bobby, Teddy, and Johnny, to take over the show. Only in their 20s, the three were the youngest circus proprietors in the world. Today, the show still runs with Teddy Fawcett's sons at the helm, and circus performance has been recognised as an important art form by the Irish Arts Council for just over a decade, finally giving recognition to the joy and excitement it brought to small-town Irish life for so many years. Harry Hensley spent 3 months in prison for kidnapping Laura. He had no fixed address at the time of his trial, and following his imprisonment, he disappears from Irish media reports, as does the multilingual interpreter Boris Lidhiot Sain, who so transfixed the local newspapers at the time. But the splendour of Fawcett Circus lives on. The next time you go to the circus, as you sit around the ring and wait for the spectacular show to begin, perhaps you should spare a thought for the performers of decades past. Think of the joy they brought to all who attended. And remember Laura the acrobat, and this long-ago incident where real-life drama threatened to overshadow even the circus's wildest acts. Thank you once again for listening to this episode of Unreal. Unreal is written and produced by me, Ruth Atkins. Music is by Slaunta from the Free Music Archive. The theme song is called The Butterfly. You can find links to the rest of the songs, as well as sources and further reading, on unrealpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, it would be great if you could leave a rating or review on iTunes, and subscribe to Unreal wherever you get your podcasts. To keep up with new episodes, and for more folklore tidbits, you can follow me on Twitter at UnrealPod, or on my newly created Facebook page, Unreal Irish Folklore. Thank you to my new followers on Twitter. It's lovely to have you. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another forgotten story of Irish folklore and history. And until then, gunairí on Bóthar Láthair.